Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. Syrian activists reported Wednesday that rebel shelling and government airstrikes near Damascus killed at least 36 people. The new violence erupted in the hours before Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif arrived in the Syrian capital. He headed straight into talks with President Bashar al-Assad about Tehran's new plan to end Syria's years-long civil war that it wants to offer to the United Nations. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which monitors violence in the country, said rebel shelling began during the morning. The attacks killed 5 people and wounded another 60. The watchdog group said government fighter jets responded with attacks on rebel-held areas in the Damascus suburbs, killing 31, injuring more than 120 others. China allowed the value of its currency to drop again Wednesday, prompting a second consecutive decline in major stock markets around the world. A weaker currency could boost China's economic growth by making Chinese-made exports less expensive for foreign buyers. Investors may be worried that this intervention signals that growth in the world's second-largest economy is slowing more than what they first thought. Beijing's change in currency exchange policy brought criticism from some members of the U.S. Congress, who say it continues a practice that gives Chinese exporters an unfair advantage and hurts American jobs. China's central bank, which strictly controls the currency, says the move is meant to make the value of the yuan more market-oriented. The International Monetary Fund welcomed the step. This is VOA News. Africa has marked a full year since its last recorded case of polio, a key step in the future eradication of the disease. The last recorded case of polio in the continent was in Somalia last year, following an outbreak in the Horn of Africa region 2 years ago that left more than 200 people paralyzed. The Somali government is not yet declaring the disease completely eradicated from the country. The chance for reemergence is there, but we will be vigilant, the Director General of Somali's Health Ministry said in an interview with VOA Somali Service. The influx of migrants from the Middle East to Greece continues, with about 100 to 500 landing on the Greek island of Kos every day, joining thousands already camped there. Greece has been overwhelmed by the wave of refugees and economic migrants, mostly from Syria. Speaking to reporters Wednesdays in Brussels, European Commission spokeswoman Natasha Bertou said,
"With record numbers of migrants arriving at the Greek borders at the moment, the situation is beyond urgent and requires a collective European response. We've also tripled the resources we devote to our maritime operations to help Greece patrol its borders and also to save lives."
Earlier this week, the EU approved national funding programs of $528 million. Greece was expected to get its first disbursement of more than $33 million quickly. In addition to funds, the EU has also proposed a relocation system to transfer 16,000 people in need of international protection from Greece to other EU member states. Several wildfires in California have burned more than 800 square kilometers, including an area north of Napa Valley that nearly doubled in size overnight, threatening 50 homes and prompting mandatory evacuation orders. The rapidly growing Jerusalem fire, named for its location within Northern California's Jerusalem Valley, was only 5% contained early Wednesday. The blaze, fueled by erratic winds, forced some residents to evacuate their homes for a second time in 2 weeks, as more than 1,100 firefighters battled to contain it. The central U.S. city of Ferguson, Missouri, was much calmer Tuesday night as riot police appeared to outnumber the small number of demonstrators, marking the first anniversary of the shooting death of an unarmed black man by a white police officer after a street confrontation. It was a stark contrast to Monday night, when police arrested about 24 protesters in the St. Louis suburb. And U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says it is very likely his emails are read by the Chinese and Russians, both of whom have been accused of cyber attacks recently on U.S. government targets. U.S. defense officials say that Russia-based state-sponsored hackers may have been behind it. I'm Bob Doty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Ruhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The more we build, the faster people come for shelter. We can't separate families. We can't tell people. We can't turn them away.
That's International Organization for Migration spokesperson Joel Millman. Details coming up. Also in the news, an estimated 50 people have died in a bomb explosion in a town in Nigeria's Borno state. And Cameroon tightens public security amid attacks by Boko Haram. And the U.S. condemns yesterday's bomb attack in Borno state. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, the International Organization for Migration, IOM, says aid agencies are racing to cope with the rapid influx of thousands of internally displaced South Sudanese at the UN compound in Malakal, Upper Nile State. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
Since mid-July, more than 16,000 people have fled to the UN site in Malakal for protection and assistance. Nearly 10,700 have arrived since August 1st. International Organization for Migration spokesman Joel Millman tells VOA, this heavy influx of new arrivals is creating a chaotic and untenable situation for both the displaced and the aid agencies trying to help them. Millman notes the camp, which was designed for 18,000, now houses 46,500 internally displaced. And this number, he says, is rapidly rising as almost 1,000 new people are arriving every day.
So we can imagine that tents are overcrowded, that the passageways between tents are being filled with sort of impromptu settlements, that sanitation is now a huge concern because people relieve themselves very close to their drinking water supply, which we have to maintain in some manner.
In addition to these already challenging conditions, Millman says aid agencies now have to cope with impending rains. He says this will worsen the already desperate living conditions in the improvised settlements and make it more difficult to provide assistance. He says IOM is doing what it can to provide services to new arrivals, but he says the current influx is unprecedented, and the heavy rains, together with increasing congestion, are adding to the collective misery. He says the UN mission in South Sudan and humanitarian agencies are working to provide additional space to shelter families in dry areas. But he says this will not solve the problem of overcrowding.
The more we build, the faster people come for shelter. We can't separate families. We can't tell people. We can't turn them away. On the other hand, we can't expose them to what could be extremely dangerous health conditions. If you don't do proper drainage, I mean, what diseases are you attracting? Can you have a new tent city that becomes a flooded tent city? And how do you deliver to that?
Millman says operations are underway to provide safe drinking water and sanitation. He says IOM is digging emergency pit latrines, though not enough to meet demand. Humanitarian agencies have been unable to provide aid to communities in areas surrounding Malakal for months because of the conflict. This is behind much of the current exodus. To stem the flow of new arrivals into Malakal, the agencies agree they must be allowed to distribute relief immediately to these underserved populations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
An estimated 50 people have died in a bomb explosion in a town in Nigeria's Borno state. Meanwhile, across the Nigerian border, Cameroon claims to have killed 10 Boko Haram militants who attacked the town of Ashigashiya. The explosion yesterday in a market in Sabongari in Nigeria has been condemned by the U.S. State Department. No one has claimed the responsibility for the bombing. Boko Haram has killed thousands during a violent six-year campaign to establish an Islamic State in northeastern Nigeria. Thousands of civilians have died and more than 1.5 million displaced by the violence. There have been delays in the coordination of a regional coalition of more than 8,000 troops from five nations to put a stop to the Boko Haram campaign, which has spread to neighboring nations. Cameroonians are learning to cope with the many security checks in their country after the government heavily deployed its military to all major towns to search people's goods, shops, and houses as Boko Haram terrorism fear grips the country. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
A soldier gives search orders at the main train station in Yaoundé. It is the first time travelers are asked to line up and pass through metal detectors before having access to the train in Cameroon. Soldier Suzanne Gam says Cameroon's government deployed them in response to four Boko Haram suicide bombings that occurred in northern Cameroon last month.
Here we search everybody. We search the customers, we search the employers. And also among us, our colleagues that work in the night, when we came in the morning, they search our bags. We also search them when they are going out because of this problem of Boko Haram that we have in hand.
Businessman Emmanuel Ngufo, who is traveling to northern Cameroon, says although the checks have led to delays, he salutes the initiative.
It's for our security. We can never tell, judging from the looks of people. So it may be inconveniencing, but in as much as we know that it's for our good, it is worth it.
Last month, about 60 Cameroonians were killed in the Central African nation's northern border area with Nigeria's Borno State, a stronghold of the Boko Haram terrorist group. The insurgents used teenage female suicide bombers in the four attacks. Bernard Okalia Bilai, governor of southwestern Cameroon, says although the attacks were in the north, the government of Cameroon has asked them to increase checks all over the country.
In the church, in the market, if you suspect a face, don't hesitate to ask the man who he is without any provocation, without any threat, without any violence. Say, please, sir, can I know who you are? Me, I'm Mr. X. It may bring some disturbances within the population, but it's the price to pay.
Cameroon's defense minister, Edgar Alemibengo, says he has also instructed business persons, schools and churches to recruit private security agents.
C'est vraiment une action d'ensemble.
He says security forces have been working hard, but they need the support of every Cameroonian. He says everyone should be educated to contribute in fighting Boko Haram until it is totally eliminated from Cameroon. He says Cameroon will underdevelop into an emerging economy when there is peace. Boko Haram, which was founded in northern neighboring Nigeria, has vowed to attack Cameroon because the country has supported the Nigerian military's mission to defeat the group. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The International Organization for Migration, IOM, is increasing reinforcement of Liberia's cross-border screening of travelers and its surveillance capacity for Ebola. The new project is being funded by USAID's Office of Foreign Disaster Assistance. No new cases of Ebola have been reported in Liberia. However, ongoing transmission of the virus continues in neighboring Sierra Leone and Guinea. IOM has been working with other disease prevention organizations and Liberia's Ministry of Health. Their objective is to ensure early detection of imported cases and the identification, tracking, and monitoring of potential high-risk contacts. Salvatore Sortina is the IOM Chief of Mission for Liberia. He spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis about the need for expanding cross-border training to combat the spread of Ebola.
Liberia is a country with very high cross-border mobility. As you know, we are in a situation where Liberia is at the town of about 2 weeks before we declare Ebola free, while we still have active transmission in the neighboring country, particularly Guinea and Sierra Leone. Based on this, it's a priority of the Ministry of Health to ensure that a certain level of surveillance is established and maintained at the borders. And the borders of Liberia present particular challenges in the sense that they are very porous. We have some 47 total official ports of entry, but over 150 unofficial crossing points where there is regular movement of population. So in order to increase surveillance, and screening has been identified as one of the measures to be put in place, particularly in port of entry, so official crossing points.
What is IOM's role in this special project or in this new project?
IOM has been supporting already border surveillance, active screening, as well as community engagement in one of the counties, which is Grand Cape Mount, at the beginning of the year. Through this new project, IOM intends to build capacity of the local actors in port of entry, as well as engaging with communities to build their capacity to conduct basically surveillance. Now this would be through three main different components. One of the most important is supporting coordination at the county level. So because of the nature of the border that I was mentioning before, it is essential that the identification of specific targets, like which area requires particular attention, is identified at the very local level. This requires that there is a coordination system at the county level. It's already established in the previous months, but needs to be supported. So IOM intends to support this by establishing a presence in key counties, although the project will cover all the border counties, and then conduct training of the actors which are involved in this coordination system, particularly the county of teams who will have focal points for border coordination in terms of surveillance. This would be our first component, so supporting county health teams and coordination system at the ground level. Then there is a component for building the capacity of border actors, particularly these would be the Bureau of Immigration, who are often in many ports of entry the only official presence who manage migration, as well as county health team and Ministry of Health for those ports of entry who also have port health, where there is an official Ministry of Health presence at the port of entry. The idea is to basically conduct training of trainers on safe entry and exit screening procedures as per SOPs and agreed by the Ministry of Health.
What is actually involved in the training?
Till now, an orientation training conducted by IOM for the official port of entry, but also other partners for what regards the community event-based surveillance, an effort conducted by a coordination group that has been established in Monrovia, which is named Border Coordination Group. Also the definition of training guidelines for basically conducting safe screening and supporting the development of contingency plans. So what happens at the port of entry in case there is somebody, a traveler, that is detected with fever or with symptoms that are associated to VD, and now this will have to be scaled up to other diseases or to be integrated in the general disease surveillance system. So the training guidelines, this is one actually of the achievement or one of the output of the project, will have to be revised in coordination with the central effort of the Ministry of Health.
What is the status of the cases of Ebola in Sierra Leone and Guinea at this point?
The last one was probably the lowest with number of cases, so it is going very well. At the moment, we don't have any area around Liberia with active transmission. So all cases are concentrated in provinces that are not bordering Liberia. Nevertheless, know that due to economic linkages and relations, there is a lot of travel from the different capitals, and therefore we expect that there will be movement, and for these reasons that do not connect just the areas that border each other. Right? So the type of movements that we intend to cover through this project is not just the normal cross-bordering movement that regards the communities that live at the border and continuously go back and forth for different relations, but also the long travels that are connected more to economic relation and trade and so forth.
How long is this project expected to go on?
The project is expected to go on until June. One last component, which is the one that will last longer and will require an important monitoring function, is actually the third component, which is engagement with communities. Because of the nature of the borders and the fact that the majority of crossing points are not actually official crossing points, it is essential that we have a close engagement with the communities which are more impacted by this high mobility. The strategy of the Ministry of Health is to basically roll out in all counties, not just border, basically roll out in every county community event-based surveillance. This is basically to engage through community health workers with the communities to make sure that they are trained in how to report according to triggers that are established by the Ministry of Health. So this project will target by engaging with community-based organizations to make sure that they can provide regular monitoring of these in areas that are actually having a quite remote access and therefore require regular monitoring to make sure that we are able to give information according to the system.
That was Salvatore Sortina, IOM Chief of Mission for Liberia. He spoke with my colleague Kim Lewis from Monrovia. Twenty past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. South Africa's new visa regulations are deterring visitors, with some analysts estimating a loss of nearly $133 million this year in the tourist industry. Gillian Parker reports from Johannesburg that South African President Jacob Zuma says the government will review the new requirements that have caused public clashes within the ruling party.
Regulations implemented last year that require South African visitors to provide biometric data in person when applying for tourist visas have been problematic in large countries like China, where only Beijing and Shanghai have South African consulates. Spending $165 billion globally in 2014, Chinese tourists are some of the world's biggest spenders. As one of the largest outbound tourism markets in the world, South Africa has invested heavily in marketing toward China. Grant Thornton Advisory Services Company Development Director Liam Back says the number of Chinese visitors to South Africa increased 15% in 2013. But when new visa requirements were implemented, demand dropped by more than 45%.
So what's happened is that the tour operators have turned around and said, "You're making it too difficult for us to travel to your country." It has absolutely had an impact on our tourism industry. And the obstacles have just become too huge. And we say, okay, well, let's just go somewhere else.
Regulations introduced in June also stipulate minors must carry their full or unabridged birth certificate when crossing South Africa's borders. Biometrics and unabridged birth certificates are largely lacking in developing countries. Poor communication about the new requirements has caused confusion and uncertainty for prospective tourists. As a result, South African travel packages are being removed from various catalogues, says Tourism Business Council of South Africa CEO Majaji Ramawela.
You're trying to kill a mosquito with a sledgehammer. Where is the real problem? It's your porous land borders. And they're just putting this regulation because according to them, this is how it's going to solve the problem. It's not solving the problem. We tend to do quick fixes, and it's hurting. We're really, really, really hurting an industry that has been doing good.
The new birth certificate rules fueled a rare public dispute within the ruling African National Congress Party at a time when President Jacob Zuma is battling lethargic economic growth and a crippling energy crisis. Tourism Minister Derek Hanekom said last month the rules need to be changed, provoking a backlash from Home Affairs Minister Melusi Gigaba, who argued that they were needed to curtail child trafficking. While human trafficking has to be tackled, many agree this tactic is not the most effective, when traffickers usually adopt clandestine and illegal means to smuggle people in and out of the country. At a mid-year national address Tuesday, President Zuma said a ministerial committee would address the unintended consequences of the new immigration regulations on various sectors, including tourism and investment. Many say the government must act swiftly to mitigate the damage already done to the industry. Gillian Parker, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Associated Press Wire Service says South African officials are reporting record numbers of rhinoceros being slaughtered by poachers. South Africa is the home of most of the world's rhinos. The government's Environment Ministry reports more than 1,200 killed in 2014. Environment Minister Edna Molewa says in the first 4 months of this year, 393 were killed, a jump of 20% over the same period last year. A group called Outraged South African Citizens Against Poaching says the figures do not include calves who die when their mothers are killed by poachers. South Africa has struggled to contain illegal poaching syndicates that are meeting rising demand for their horns in parts of Asia, including Vietnam. For years, insecurity has remained one of the major challenges facing inhabitants of major towns and cities in Africa. But in Kenya's vast Rift Valley region, a local leader has become a household name for using Twitter to fight crime and enhance safety in the area. Francis Karuki, 50, a chief and government-appointed administrator, is embracing the new technology to address carjackings, burglaries, and theft. From Nakuru in Kenya's Rift Valley, correspondent Ruben Chama reports.
And if their chicken is lost, they call me chief. My chicken is lost, put it in Twitter, but they don't know what is Twitter. They know Twitter is chief's message. They don't know what is Twitter, but they know. Rather put in Twitter.
That's Chief Kariuki, popularly known as the Tweeting Chief. He is the local government administrator in charge of Umoja Lanet in Nakuru County. Citizens are impressed by his use of the social media for combating crime in his community. Chief Kariuki boasts, saying that he has been able to reduce theft, carjacking, and burglary.
So when I send a message out, they are either stolen a car or they are breaking to somebody's house. What they do is they run away because they know they have been discovered. We have recovered, carjacked, they just dropped them. Another day they were stealing a transformer here. And people told me, oh, Baraka is the transformer. Is being stolen. I sent a message out and this guy jumped from the top and ran away.
Chief Kariuki, a former teacher for over 20 years, started using Twitter in May 2011 to help make local people aware of crime and other issues. He quit teaching to pursue his newfound passion as a public servant. He felt he could serve more people as a chief than as a teacher.
It's a requirement that every administrator like me or every chief to have 2 public balazas in a month to address different issues. For example, maybe there was an outbreak of polio, or maybe like today we have the free medical camp. So it was getting hard for me to be able to communicate and call people to come for these meetings.
He says that communicating to the locals was a major challenge, and this prompted him to look for an alternative method to relay information to the people of Umoja Lanet.
Luckily, I was able to come across Twitter website and look for tweeting through SMS. From there, life was never the same again.
The tweeting chief says that Twitter has come in handy at a time when he had challenges communicating to the elderly and locals who have little understanding of the social media. He says that one does not need to have a smartphone or internet connection to access his messages. All his people are able to get his messages immediately he sends in any type of mobile phone.
Even the cheapest phone, they don't need to have any sort of internet. It is SMS-based. So that's why when I saw how it works, my next thing was now, how do I connect with the citizen? What in Kenya you call mamomboga, those people who do not have any sort of phones, the internet-enabled phones or smartphones. So 8988 solved the whole problem. That code, because it converts tweet into text message. And they can also be able to follow me through text message.
For a man who wears many hats, like Chief Kariuki, the work has not been an easy feat. He is not only a man of the people, but also a father and a husband. You might wonder what language the chief uses to send his information to more than 15,000 people, some educated while others are illiterate. Well, this is what he has to say.
And I write the simplest language they can understand. If their chicken is lost, they call me chief. My chicken is lost, put it in Twitter, but they don't know what is Twitter. They know Twitter is chief's message. They don't know what is Twitter.
For Chief Kariuki's admirers, Umoja Lanet is a safe haven thanks to one man's curiosity for technology and passion for public service. Reporting for VOA News, this is Ruben Chama in Nakuru.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhi Benam. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Shaogen Chang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa. Around the world, the killing of Zimbabwe's beloved Cecil the Lion angered people and highlighted sport hunting in Africa. On Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they examine trophy hunting and what can be done to protect endangered species like lions, elephants, and rhinos. That's next time on VOA Africa.